extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Chuck D, David Goss. This is our MLS Cup Mega Preview. Don't have great horn. Yeah, I don't have my horn. My horn sound effects are a bit off these days. MLS Cup is here, man. It's one game left. Saturday, you know it, December 11th, Portland Timbers, Providence Park, hosting New York City FC, 3 p.m. Eastern. Watch it, ABC, Unimas, Turien, TSN, TVA. We're on SiriusXM FC, channel 157. It is also available there. If you're stuck in the car, or you prefer radio, or you just like to listen to those guys over the TV audio, you're there, Dave. Charlie and I, we're in our nice home offices. Charlie, of course, with the wood grain, and I'm just back
Charlie.
Here.
I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so it's a wood-heavy vibe in my hotel room. So it feels like I could be in Charlie's house.
But do they hang pictures of themselves in the hotel? Is there pictures of Charlie hanging about the hotel? Or?
Yeah, look at the moon behind me.
He is the moon and the stars of this show. Yeah, wow. He is truly.
You know, I got to Portland, and everyone's like, "Do you know Charlie Davies?" That was the number one thing I heard since I got here.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, it's coolness by association. Give us the vibe check, Dave, as we get ready to preview the entirety of this game and much, much more. What's the Rose City vibe check? How long have you been there? What have you seen? What have you heard?
I landed this morning, so I've been here like, I don't know, feels like 25 hours, and it's ready. It's one of those cities where anytime I've been here for a Portland game, you can feel it. You see the scarves out everywhere. Every business has them in it. People are wearing hats. People are wearing their jerseys around, just walking around like it's raining and cold, and people still have their Timbers gear like over their jackets. You know, there's a line of people sleeping outside of the stadium. And when I left the stadium after doing some of the media stuff, more people are still showing up and getting ready. I think they give out their wristbands at 7 a.m. on Friday morning. So there's still time to get in if you haven't gotten in yet. And
the line is long. There's people with standing desks out there. Like there are people they're hunkered down for the long run.
The smart people have fire pits. That's a move.
Well, there's literal on the sidewalk. This is like
it's a pit, bro. It's a fire pit. It's okay. It's extended.
Is that up to code? That doesn't feel like it's up to code.
Wow, Weeby, Narc.
I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah.
have you been to Mother's Bistro yet?
I have not. Is that where I have to go?
Oh.
Charlie, unfortunately, I've been here one night and I'm sitting here doing a show with you.
Okay, one of the best spots, a best French toast I've had, probably had in my life.
Ooh.
Charlie, just bringing the recommendations from the high life. If you'd like to live the high life, just follow Charlie's recommendations.
It's just $75 a piece for French toast.
This
is the most delicious and expensive French toast you've ever seen. You'll never taste it, but you can see it. I'll show it to you.
It's reasonably priced, and you can get the ones with Lucky Charms on them.
They're magically disgusting.
Delicious. I like it. Ugh. I like it plain as well, but they have some.
If you order the Lucky Charms, I'm judging you. What's the weather like, Dave? I was checking out the forecast, and I promise, folks, we'll talk about soccer in a little bit, but the weather is like, it's so, people in the Pacific Northwest are like, yeah, idiot. It's like exactly how it always is in early December. It's like
that's
right above freezing
heard.
And it's pouring rain. Oh, really?
People have told me it's colder than it normally is.
Mm.
I've had multiple people be like, it's not normally this bad. There's supposed to be snow, I think, on Monday. Diego Chara was doing his rounds for his interviews, and I was waiting outside the call-up room. They did an incredible full, I think, 2.5-hour show with all these people that you can go check out. And Diego Chara was waiting to go in, and I was like, how's it going, man? Like, are you excited for Saturday? And he just goes, it's so cold. And I was like, aren't you used to this? And
he's like, no. Mucho frío.
He's like, normally this time of year, I'm already in Cali, like, hanging out with my family. And I was like, oh, fair, yeah. Because one, they never host. And two, the season always moves around and all that stuff. So he seemed to not be enjoying or did not seem to think it was normal how cold it was.
Yeah, it's going to be 100% precipitation. Difficult word to spit out there. About mid to high 40s at kickoff on noon Pacific
time.
Perfect. So you're going to have rain. It was supposed to be crazy windy. Like, I checked it 3 or 4 days ago, and they were saying 47 mile per hour wind gusts around noon. That's down to like, that's down to 14. So that's manageable. Charlie, give me your hype level right now. 1 to 10. Where are you at on this MLS Cup? How hyped are you?
9.
Okay, so how are we at 9, and how could we get you to 10, I guess, is the question here. Just time. Can time get you to 10, Charlie? Like, you know, once you start seeing you hear the songs coming through your TV set, and you start feeling like, you get to a 10 there. What gets you to a 9 then? What makes this special?
I think what will get it to a 10 is probably just the game day. If it's game day, I think, all right, Thursday, we got some time. It's building up. But 9, I'm hyped for this match because I think New York City FC are the better team in terms of quality. But that does not always get you the trophy. And then for Portland, they're a team that's playing with passion, inspiration in front of their home crowd. And they play on another level. When they play in Portland, they are almost unbeatable because they just feel like they just keep going. They don't stop. The crowd's into it. You hear Timber Joe with the chainsaw the whole damn game. And I remember I was distracted. I remember my first time playing there, and I was like, what is this? Is someone really walking around with a chainsaw? But
he does like the random revs. He likes to like fire it up in times that you're like, is there really a need to like...
There's no need for it. Like, But I think I'm also hyped for the coaching battle, if you will, just because I think both of them are capable of changing things up and switching things in game. The system changes. Maybe it's a personnel change that could impact the game. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this plays out.
I like the storylines on this one. No surprise to you there. Everybody's like, oh, narrative guy likes his storylines. But on like the Portland side, this could be Diego Valeri's last game. This could be it. Sebastian Blanco is doing all his drills and whatever. We'll talk about that a bit, like sprinting around the practice field. But there's no guarantee he's ready to start. But you better believe he's trying to start. I've been saying, like, it's not Willis Reed. God knows it's not. It's not Jordan Flew game. But it's like a very light version of that, of can he play, will he play, will the hamstring be there? He's supposed to be the alpha. So will he be in the field and do it? Timbers winning at home, just that in itself. On New York side, trying to get the bragging rights over both the Red Bulls, but for themselves as well. Like, this whole group has been trying to do this for years. You know, the core of this team has been trying to do this since basically, you could probably just say, beginning of 2017, because Maxime Cheneau came in 6 months before that. Then it was Sean John, it was Maxi, and it was Alexander Kayens that came in that transfer window. Then after that, a little bit, you know, Tinnerholm, etc. But that is the core, those four guys. They've been the best regular season team in the league. The points show that. They have not done it in the playoffs, and nobody remembers them as the best regular season team because they got nothing to show for it. Nothing. There's nothing there. There's no hardware. There's no silverware. There's no plaudit. It's just like almost. And can they capture some attention in New York City where, you know, I think you said it on one of these last shows, Charlie, they're still trying to push their way into that marketplace. It's difficult. Before we go line by line...
Wait, let me just say this. I got on my flight was like 7 a.m. this morning from JFK, and there was a ton of NYCFC fans on my flight. And who I know very well was on it as well, and getting off and talking to them and walking, you know, to the hotel with them. And they're saying 1,800, maybe between 1,800 and 2,000.
I mean, I'm doing hopeful that that's breakfast. True.
Yeah, I think they're doing a boozy breakfast to get pumped up for the game because, again, it's a noon kickoff here and you got to be in the building early and all that stuff. But that got me pumped. Like, you know, we heard all the 200, 400, whatever it was for Philly, but to have that many people come cross country, and that's not an easy trip. Like, Portland is not really a hub that comes out of New York City. It's not an easy trip to make, and it just shows you, like, one of the special things in sports, and Charlie, you've experienced it, me and Weeby have both covered it, is playoff runs. There's momentum to a run of a playoff win becomes 2 weeks, which becomes... We beat the Revs. We are now the team to beat. And the flow of it is such an important part of when you look back at the history and the stories. I think Merritt said in an interview today, like, they're going to write a book about this Portland Timbers team and what we've done. And so that was really cool to see the fans who, you know,
not if they lose.
Expected, for sure. But who expected to win versus Atlanta at home. Then you travel up to New England, hopeful. Then you beat them. Now you're going down to Philly into what was a Lions then in Philly. And I've heard all the stories of the Philly versus New York fans and how ridiculous it was. And so just, I think that whole momentum, that's one of those things that I get pumped about. And that got me from a 9 to a 9.7. I think I'll be at a 10 on Saturday.
Yeah, probably sitting in like the 9.3, 9.4 range, but I could be juiced. I could be juiced up a little higher.
But a Kansas City 9.4 is in New York 12.1.
Exactly, dude. That. I broke the scale. I just it's
the
broken.
Richter scale. I'm so far. Just
yeah, I'm so far. But they're like in New York. They're like, calm down, bro. Calm down. Like, what are you talking about? Get out of here. Get out of here. BetMGM odds here. This is strange. It's plus 160. So bet 100 to win 160. Plus 160. For both teams. Actually, bet 100 to win 60. What am I talking about? I don't understand betting. I'm going to be honest
you
with
bet
you. But it means that both teams
get 160, yeah, I don't know. Which means you'd make 60.
Got it. All right. Figured that out. But both teams are like in a dead heat. It's even.
Yeah.
Some parlays didn't go well for me in college, and I gave it up.
I think Charlie already said it, and we'll get into it. But I think in abstract, most people would say NYCFC is the better team. But Portland has a huge home advantage. And so I really think you're going into a game where you're talking 50-50, 51-49. Like, this is tight. And then the biggest unknown is that they haven't played this year. Like, when NYCFC went to the Revs, you could say, well, the underlying numbers, the matchups they had, you could see all this. These teams have not played in an MLS regular season game in 2 years. So there is a ton of unknown in how they match up against each other, which I think you see that in those odds.
All right, MLS Cup, Saturday, December 11th. Again, I'm going to remind you in case you need reminding. Portland Timbers, New York City FC, Providence Park, 3 p.m. Eastern. You can watch on ABC, on Unimas, on TUDN in the United States, in Canada, TSN TVA. Robin Fraser, by the way, is on that ABC desk coverage. That's really cool. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Of course, they lost the last second to Mabiala, and that goal did the Rapids. We have the pregame and postgame coverage on MLS Twitter. It is big-time shows for both of them. So Dave's going to be with Zarek in Portland. Then it'll be myself and Doyle and Charlie. I think Kalen as well. And so we'll be pre- and postgame on that one. Come tune in. Hang out with us. Is he? Oh, yeah, he's there. I forgot he made the trip. So it's not Kalen. Right. I think it's just the three of us. Anyway, SiriusXMFC, channel 157. Again, we're proud of being on the channel. If you're listening to us there now, awesome. They also have the game. Joe Tolleson, who our thoughts go out to. His father passed away this week. So thoughts go with Joe. But he and Tony Miola are on the mic on that one. And then the United States of Soccer is live from Portland on Friday at noon Eastern time with Jason Davis and our boy Chris Wondolowski, who's dipping his toes in the media waters. On today's show, we're going to break it down unit by unit. So goalkeeper all the way to coach, bench, attackers, midfield, defenders, PKs, all that stuff. Steve Zakwani did it at MLSsoccer.com, so go check that out. We'll try to imagine what a win or a loss would mean for each of these clubs, and then MLS never stops, and this is extra time after dark, so we got to talk about this legit stuff, the Lewis Morgan transfer or blockbuster or whatever it's going to be, TBD. And as you said, Dave, go check out the call-up live from Media Day. They had some really good stuff, and MLSsoccer.com is just packed. Doyle has his tactical preview. Sam Jones has MLS Cup from A to Z. I've got 10 questions for you on Friday morning. Tom Bogert has stuff. Charlie Bohm, Greg Seltzer, Steve Zakwani. It's just packed with content, so go check it out. If you want to know about this game, the information is there for you. Let's do it. Let's go. Goalkeeper is where we start. Joey O hit us up. He says, who do you start if you have a game tomorrow? As it so happens, there's one on Saturday. Steve Clark or Sean Johnson? Who has the edge here?
Charlie,
who's got it, Charlie? You basically said you went out on a limb,
Charlie,
early and you basically gave it away. You were like, NYCFC's got the edge on everything.
I mean, I've scored on both keepers.
Oh.
No.
Hey, great point. Great point. Good analysis.
No, to be honest, both have stoned me.
There's the flip side of it. I've scored on both of you.
Yeah, I just have to put that into
two context. Sides of the coin.
Because I've seen both of them. And I think Steve Clark is really capable of coming up with this like incredible, crazy save standing on his head. And I think Sean Johnson is just so consistent from minute one to minute 90. I think early on in his career, he was always guilty of having, you know, that one calamity, right?
There's been a couple little calamities this year, but not of late.
Yeah, I think he's really sharpened up his game. And I do believe, because Steve Clark tends to take a little bit more chances with the ball at his feet.
Can we just talk 2015 MLS Cup for a second?
No, I mean, that don't is do the that. First, don't do that.
It's the opening goal for Diego Valeri. It's a long time ago, but it's just an example from a game this.
It's an example, but he does tend to take a little bit more of a risk with the ball at his feet, as opposed to Sean Johnson knows, I got to get this thing off my feet ASAP. So in saying that, I do believe I'd give the edge to Sean Johnson, just because I feel that he doesn't have to come up with some of those crazy wild saves, just because his positioning is very sound and the back line doesn't leave him in those instances. Because Mabiala and Zuperic will come out, they will engage, they'll dive in, they'll mix up, and then it'll leave Steve Clark with having to make one of those massive saves.
So I'm just gonna say, blame Clark for that? Like, is that
no? I don't. I'm saying, Sean Johnson in this match won't have to.
Oh yeah,
they won't have to rely on him to make those big saves.
Yeah. Like, it's different for the match. But who would you choose for your imaginary team to start for a big game for you tomorrow?
Sean Johnson.
I'm taking Steve Clark in this case.
Why?
Let me just explain, and maybe I'm just over-reliant on some of the, especially with goalkeepers, because I don't want to sit here and tell you, like, I'm some, people are like, okay, well, his footwork on this was this, and he should have done that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I can't do that. I don't have that technical ability or knowledge. I'm looking at, from a lot of different models, who's saved more goals than they were supposed to save on the average. So, it's the goals minus XG model on this. And whether it be Second Spectrum, which has Steve Clark second in the entire league to Max Crepeau, or it's American Soccer Analysis, who has Steve Clark, I think, fifth in the league. Best number, saying he saved four goals, basically, that should have gone in. His numbers are way better than Sean Johnson's in those. And I think Sean Johnson is a wonder.
That goes back to my point.
He's a one. And I was going to just say that you're probably right, that he's in more positions where he has to save those. Sean has had a very good season in both models. He's basically right at that like trend line where he's not hurting you at all, but according to the model, he's not necessarily saving others that you would take away. I don't know. At home, understanding that turf, understanding the conditions that he's going to be in with the rain, with everything else. I'm not saying Sean Johnson never played in those conditions. I'm just saying it's more normal for Steve Clark to train in those conditions and play in those conditions.
He was at home in 2015 too, just so you know.
I know. Wow. I know he was. Okay. And you better believe he's going to remember that, Charlie. I know. He's going to remember that. That's going to be burned in his mind. You think he's going to take any stupid risks with the ball at his feet? I would think not, right? But I think this is razor thin. Like, to me, this is, it's really a personal preference thing. And I just think in a game like this where you may be asked to say, pull one out of the back of the net, Stefan Fry style, that shouldn't be pulled out based on all logical reasoning, Clark seems to have the advantage this year in making spectacular saves. And he might have to make one. And oh, by the way, we'll get to in the defense. The Timbers defense is not giving up chances the way that they used to.
I'm going with size. That's why I'm going with size.
I think that's
someone
fair.
Who's just stable and consistent.
I think it's fair with Sean John with size because he also has, I agree with Charlie. I think he has better feet. And when you talk about the goals and the goals taken away and all that, I think you're looking at a player in Sean John who has created less, who helps his team create less moments where he has to do that. And you're looking at a player who's worn the captain's armband at time over the course of this playoffs, has a teenager playing at right back that he's helping kind of guide through this whole experience. So I think I agree with Charlie, but like you said, it's very close and it's a strength for both of these teams, right? Neither of them are going to lose it because of a mistake that's made by one of these goalkeepers. And to your point, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah,
Knocking on wood on that.
No,
I don't think they will either.
It's not knocking on wood if you're saying they're good. But that's the point. Like, don't throw
that jinx out, though.
Yeah, jeez.
Right, if you're going to
knock on wood, just so you save the blushes from guys that are good enough to not have it happen. How about in PKs, though?
They've both played three games in the playoffs this year, right? Neither of them has made that mistake.
Yeah.
So you got to look at that.
That's true. How about PKs? Who would you give the edge in PKs? And let's just widen it out to both teams on this because we're kind of talking about specialists here at this point. I know we're jumping ahead, but we've just saw New York City FC beat the Revs in PKs. Sean John saved Adam Buxa. But I believe all the other attempts from the Revs were makes. And then you have five conversions, all perfect on NYCFC's side. And that was important because Maxi and Alexander Collins both made clutch PKs after Buxa was saved to basically to ice the deal. They had missed against Pumas in Leagues Cup. You knew I was bringing it back to Leagues Cup when NYCFC lost 3-2 on PKs. And Johnson made two saves in that one. So that's, you know, you're seeing Sean Jung come up big in big moments. By the way, regular season playoffs, Sean Johnson, let's see, he has saved, I'm just going to do the math, 16 of 53, or they've been missed. They could be sky balls or off the post or whatever. But 16 of 53, he has prevented from going in the net somehow. Opponents have 70% success rate. Steve Clark is 22 of 28 success rate for opponents. So he's saved 6 of 28, much smaller sample size. His opponents have a 79% success rate of scoring in those situations. So on those numbers, there's a slight advantage for Sean John. But also, Orlando City lost, or Orlando City won, excuse me, last year in that crazy Rodrigo Schlegel game. That was a 6-5 in which basically Nani was the only miss for Orlando.
So you think
and
Bill
Sean John saved that one.
You think Bill Tuiloma goes in goal if they gets the PKs?
I don't know. I feel like it's always sunny right now. I'm like up against the whiteboard with a lot of string, like back and forth. And then there's just not a lot of examples here for the Timbers. Yeah, you know, these rats aren't going to kill themselves in the basement. All right, FC Cincinnati, they lost the Timbers in PKs, and MLS is back. Steve Clark made a save, then Kendall Waston got intimidated and hit one into orbit, and the Timbers didn't miss any there. So who are you going to give the advantage to on the saving side? I think it's pretty even on the saving side. The question is converting. Who do you think would have an advantage converting between these two teams?
I would say NYCFC statistically. So a lot of the studies that have come out now of tournaments, because we saw so many in the Euros, we've seen them in World Cups in the past. Teams that take penalty kick shootouts in tournaments tend to be better the second time. And they tend to do better. So I would say for NYCFC to have already been there, to have already scored, to have already have that confidence, normally that carries over in a positive way. So I would give them the edge.
What do you think, Charlie?
I'm going to go with New York City FC because just beating the Revolution, you had to get by Matt Turner, who's arguably the best penalty kick stopper in Major League Soccer. Oh,
Tim Amelia says, hold on.
I'm not even going to get into that. Right. Arguably, I just think that from the spot, I think New York City FC have a little bit more when it comes to players who can step up and put it in the goal in these big moments.
And remember, against the Revs, Tati was out with the red card. So you assume he takes
He's been cash. Tati's not the question. Like, Jesus Medina's not the question. The question is Maxi. And
sure. But they score.
Chineau, who's missed, and Collins, who's missed.
But you made five of them, and you didn't have Tati as an option in that game. Yeah. So you're only getting better than what you were.
I'm going to take the Timbers just to just throw it on the other side. I think it's a great point, and I haven't read the Academia, Dave, about
previous
PKs.
Oh, this stuff is fascinating.
PKs.
It shows you one Kellen Acosta has, because literally what it says is every second you make a player wait. Any reason, right? When the goalie's like, is it on the spot? You know, someone tries to beat up the spot. You talk to the ref. All of that, the percentage goes down. That you
just talk. You talk your ish and get them to come back.
People
and
just
talk
get
to
nervous.
You.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Kellen, there's some
Kellen's
advice.
Studying. Kellen's out there studying.
Yeah, Timbers, NYCFC. muck it up a little bit. Slow this thing down. Okay, I'm going to go Timbers. I just think you talk like Valeri, Mora, Blanco, Nijgoda. You kind of go down that list. Dairon, he's a killer from the PK spot. Santiago Moreno, I think both sides, it's basically even on these. I don't know why we're really debating it. We'll see if it goes to PKs. How about the defense? Who you guys got on the defense? And who would be worries for you? You still worried about those outside backs, Dave? I mean, no, that's been sort of become a little bit of a cliche, but it seems like Gio's kind of covered him up.
Yeah, I don't think you can. And I think... I think it was Luis Mabiala who gave a good quote coming out of the Rapids game, who said, we had never played together before. Like, you're talking about a back line, a back four, where 50% of us had never met before the season started. And so I think while you're looking at fullbacks who are not as defensive naturally inclined, right, their best attributes are going forward and getting into the attack. Now you're looking at a group that understands each player's attributes and has a relationship. And so a credit to them, because they have clean things up outside of the goal they conceded against Minnesota. Nothing has been an issue because of the fullbacks. The biggest part to me is the tackles. If you get beat, you get beat. Don't give up penalties. And so often from June through September, it was, you know, unnecessary bonehead penalties that Van Rinken and Bravo were getting called for. taking guys down from behind who are going away from goal, guys who are cutting back upfield, going in the other direction. Like, there were silly mistakes. All of that has left their game. And then for Portland, you look at the flip side, which is NYCFC is going to come out and press you. And I thought you saw the quality of these players against RSL when they got pressed. They invited that pressure, and now you're looking at a back four plus Char plus Paredes who are comfortable under pressure and who are happy to play through that and actually create an advantage when they break it to go the other way. So it's been a whole new team for this Timbers side over the last 6 to 7 games, and I think I have to stop talking about that. And I'm pretty sure Merritt Paulson gave me a side eye when he walked by, and that's what he was thinking about when he saw me.
Yeah, Merritt was like, hey, Dave, did you know that the Timbers are 13-3-1 in their last 17? That's half an MLS season. This is from Chris Reifer. Thank you. I'm just plagiarizing Chris over a full season 80-point pace. But I went back and looked. They had issues with giving away goals, but it's 14 goals allowed in those last 17 games. Yeah. Only one of the three losses they have was at home, and that was the crazy Vancouver one. They have seemingly, Charlie, solved some of those issues. Are there any issues you see on NYCFC's side? Any, you know, anything that Ronnie Dialo would have to sort of say, okay, well, we need to protect this a little bit. We've got to be wary of this, or is it all good, all money?
I would say, just from seeing New York City FC this playoff run, Chanel and Collins are as good as it gets as a partnership in Major League Soccer. Almost one that you hope for and wish for, because they are so in tune with each other. They read each other's movements so well. They cover for each other well. Sean Johnson has a good understanding of how they play. So when you're looking at that triangle of your two center backs and your keeper, it feels like it's always connected. I think Admonson at left back, it took him a little while to get into it, and then he simplifies his game. He plays very simple. He always makes the pass, gets it off his foot. And I think he's starting to now understand how I can overlap, get involved in the attack, but he's been very sound. And then Tavon Gray on the other side, not the most comfortable with the ball at his feet, but a sound defender. And as long as he focuses on defending first, this back line, to me, is in good shape. I mean, you look at the tests that they've had in the playoffs, from Atlanta to New England to Philadelphia, and they've really come together and came up big in these moments. So I have no questions, zero question marks about New York City FC's backline.
So I think I agree with everything Charlie said. I go back to what I thought going into the Philly game, which we didn't really see because Kai Wagner wasn't available and he didn't have the attack you probably should have down the wing. Tavon Gray's been great in these playoffs. I still see him a little stiff when he's defending side to side. And I think he is still more naturally a center back. Philly didn't have the players to take advantage of that. Dairon Asprilla, Bravo coming up from the back. Those are guys who can. Plus, with Asprilla, he becomes that second forward. And so now Tavon Gray has to be able to track him inside or pass him off. I just think, I don't think Gray's been bad at all. I just think this is a different test, what Portland can give to what he's had to see so far, especially with how poorly Tajon Buchanan played for most of that game in the run of play when he was on his side. Charlie's about
you
to
DeJuan say.
Jones?
DeJuan Jones was awesome.
I know. He's the most athletic left back in the league, and Tavon Gray was able to deal with it. Yeah,
but a lot of what DeJuan Jones, well, one, he didn't have any danger alongside him. So everything he did, Medina could track him into, and it was double teamed. The other thing was, a lot of what DeJuan Jones did well in that game against NYCFC was coming inside and connecting and linking up and being an attacker inside rather than going outside. I mean, Ian Boateng had the cross from that spot. Now, obviously, Gray pulls up with the injury or the cramp, whatever it was. I just think this is different.
I do, too. I think Dairon is the most difficult test he will have faced so far, and especially a fresh Dairon. Sleeping at home Dairon. He hasn't had to go anywhere. New York City have been all over the place. They got to travel cross-country and figure it out and do it in different conditions on a different field that Tavon has not played on. That's where I would attack if I was the Portland Timbers. I would try to, you know, I'm not saying that, again, he's been very good in these playoffs.
He's also a teenager.
But that's, That's where I would focus my efforts. Yeah, of course. And Dairon's been one of our best attacking players. If I'm Gio Savarese, I'm like, dude, run. Get in behind him. Get on the ball. Run at him. See if he can stay with you. If Sebastian Blanco starts, we'll get to that in a second. Get over there. Have some good combination play because that's where Blanco wants to be as well. Jesus Medina's got a big job to help out. He really does. Who do we give the edge to? Who are you guys giving it to? You going NYCFC? You going Portland?
It has to be NYCFC.
Just based on the center back pairing.
You're talking about the best center back pairing maybe in the league over the last few years because other ones that have been good have gone and come. 100%. And Sean John is a big part of that as well. So, yeah, I think you're looking at NYCFC has the advantage there.
I'm going to go New York City FC with the advantage there.
Charlie's going with them on every category. We don't have to round.
Yeah, he's like big.
No, not every
big
not
surprise every. For you here. Going to Blue Side of New York for you.
But I will tell you this. I will take Mabiala all day, every day on set pieces. If you're comparing the two center backs on set pieces, I'm going to go with Portland in that case. And there is a huge advantage playing at home when you have two center backs, especially in Mabiala, who can go out and get you that game winner or who can clear that ball out off the line or at the six marking. So Mabiala is an outlier when it comes to when you're comparing these back lines.
Again, I don't understand odds, but I'm taking the draw on this one. I'm going in the is that allowed? Can I cut it down the middle?
No, we're not doing draws.
Can I go down the middle? Because
like,
I think
this is like Michael Scott. It's like a star. He gets 5 points.
You're not gonna if anything, I would have gave you the draw if you said that for keepers because of your argument, but now you're gonna go draw.
Well, yeah, I'm about to make the argument. I think outside back, I think that given what Gio has done to sort of simplify things for his guys, they have more experience. I think they have more quality going forward and providing a threat and attack, and they're not going to be asked to do that as much in this game, I don't think, but they can if they need to. So I think they have the advantage at outside back. I think you guys are right. There is an advantage right there for NYCFC at center back, but then you have set pieces.
This is a
so that's where I'm coming
argument.
Down on the draw.
There's a flawed argument.
Where's the flaw?
In MLS, flaw. In any league, in any setup, but mainly in MLS, if you have the better center backs, you are the better team. So you can say that Portland has better fullbacks, NYCFC is better. Then you are saying NYCFC has a better defense in your mind. Boom.
Wow, this is just typical outside back erasure. You just can't do it. You can't put him in the best 11. You just can't deal with it. All right, I'm sticking with
my
draw.
Best 11, by the way.
That's fair. Okay, how about the midfield? Let's start with the big question in the midfield. We're keeping the tens in there, so that means Maxi and we assume Sebastian Blanco. Does Sebastian Blanco start this game?
I still don't know how he's even being considered to start this game because I've had my fair share of hamstring pulls and not in any scenario have I been shot like because the action that he gave in that first game when he grabbed that hamstring like typically it feels like a gunshot to the back of your hamstring and you have to come out typically that's at least a 3-week injury typically.
Yeah, I mean, I thought so too. I didn't think there was any chance that we would see him until the preseason, assuming they got a contract done, right? Like, he has head and hands, he's crying, it just seemed very clear, and then last week it went from questionable to probable, and they were hinting at it, they didn't have to play him, and, yeah, I mean, here's the quote, I went and pulled the quote from today, I think, it's, he's better and better, this is Gio, we now know that he will be part of the game, let's see how. Seba, watching him say this, says, I will put my body to the limit. I want to be on this game. It's a final and not many players play finals. I saw the video. We can see in training. Sebastian Blanco is running around, he's cutting, he's sprinting, he's trying to accelerate. If I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't have believed it. But it seems like he can play. And like Gio's saying he can play, and Seba's saying, I'm gonna put my body on the line. Like should he start? That's a much different question than should he or can he play. Should he start? I'm asking you guys.
I got you, by the way.
What?
Because we were at Providence Park, and they're doing media day, and everyone's going into the different rooms and doing stuff, and I'm tracking every movement Sebastian Blanco makes. He goes up the stairs. I'm seeing any twinge, any hitch. What foot is he pushing off of? I got you, dude. I was like this the whole time.
Just Zapruder footage. Peepers.
I'm asking everyone. I'm like, how does Seba look? How does Seba look? Everyone's giving me all the info, all the dirt. He's good. That's what I got. That's all I got.
Okay,
I don't think he's going to start. I think they've all been pretty open about the fact he's not 90 minutes match fit. And I don't think, based off the RSL game and what this game will call for, starting him is the necessity. I think having him if you need him is the necessity, not risking him and hoping that he's able to push through. So I would be shocked if he started.
I get it. It's MLS Cup. You want to play. The team wants you to play. But realistically, with an injury like that, it's so easy to re-aggravate it. And then you're putting yourself in a really bad position because the recovery is going to be two times or three times longer. So if he is cutting, if he is doing things, if he does feel like there's a level he can get to that's still sufficient and he can still provide, he's better served coming off the bench. Because what good is it to have him start and then 5-10 minutes in, boom. I also think if you have a hamstring injury, you have at least 45 minutes during that first half to warm up, to keep it warm, you know, test it a little bit. And then coming into the second half, you get another 15-20 minutes to see how it's going. All while Gio Savarese has a good understanding of where this game is going. When would they need to put him in? So it's great for him to come off the bench as opposed to having a long warm up, then a stop, then you got to wait for the anthems, then another, you know, stop, and then you start the game at 0 to 100. I don't think that's ever going to be good for anyone who's battling, you know, a hamstring injury. So I fully expect to see him starting on the bench.
I'm convinced. Start him on the bench, Gio. We'll talk about it more, I'm sure, in the bench part. So that means what? Marvin Loera comes in? That's who we're assuming makes that. I mean, so, Dairon's coming in. Well, you could go Dairon and Santiago Moreno. But who plays in the place before him?
So Dairon comes into the team, obviously. The question becomes, do you want to put Jimmy Chara in that central spot like you did against RSL and play Santiago Moreno on the wing, or do you want Larea in that space and keep Jimmy Chara out wide? I think that's the question. That's kind of what you have to figure out. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Larea in the team and Chara, because I think you get the best out of Chara when he's out wide, especially with, you assume there's attacks coming up from the fullback position for NYCFC, so there's space for him to take advantage of down that wing. And I also think you saw such a high level from Larea, and that gives you Moreno and Blanco as bench options to be real weapons. And I talked to Gio for a while outside of the interview about Moreno and how excited they are about him and how much he's already improved and what he's done for this team. But I still think you're looking at a guy who, you know, can be a killer off the bench and change the game, because you don't know if Blanco, maybe you bring Blanco off the bench and he's not that strong and you kind of have to take him back off. So I think Moreno off the bench makes more sense.
I also think just the way NYCFC has dominated the ball and dominated the midfield so far in these playoffs, that asking Jimmy to be that guy in there with Paredes and Chara, you're better served having Loera in there. He can be a threat attacking wise, but he's really clean and responsible in those tight areas. I think that's going to be hugely, hugely important in this game to try to slow down NYCFC and make sure you keep the game in the right game state for the Timbers to be in a position to have the space to run into, to counterattack, to do what they like to do. Diego Chara, I mean, he's the everlasting one. He's not going away anytime soon, even at 35. It doesn't stop for him.
It's better.
I don't know if he's on like the preki like yoga thing, like if
it's the smile.
It's just the happiness.
You smile like that, you feel young. Yeah,
it just like flows through you. And then it's Paredes, of course. On the other side, you've got James Sands, I would think, and Alfredo Morales, and then Maxi Morales. What are the strengths of the New York side, in your opinion, Charlie? What do you see from that side?
From that side, I look at Sands and Morales. They're just busy. I think James Sands realizes when he's in possession, it's too slow. And he's getting dispossessed. He's losing the ball. He's putting himself, the team, in bad positions. When he plays with the ball, in the team and the ball in front of him, and he's quick, and it's one touch, two touch, and it's very simple, that's when he's at his best, and that's when New York City's FC is at their best, because typically that means he's finding Maxi Morales in a pocket, because he's right off his foot, where he's finding Morales, and Morales finds the other Morales. So if I'm going to look at these two teams, Portland gets the nod for me because of Diego Chara. And yes, Paredes has been good next to him, but Diego Chara is just a beast. And he's one of those players who I think every team searches for. Legit, every Major League Soccer team goes down to South America after what Diego Chara has done in Major League Soccer and says, where can I find the next Chara? How can I find a midfielder who can be a ball winner, who can start attacks, who's very simple on it, plays one touch, two touch, he's clean, and he's just a good, I watch him, I'm like, man, he's a good teammate too. Like, he's the kind of guy you want to be on the field with because of how he does it, his character, his attitude. One player I've always respected. Well, every time I've played against him, I'm like, man, I like you. I hate playing against you, but I like you.
You know, we were joking about NYCFC's scouting network here. I don't know if that was during the show or pre-show, but like Yangel Herrera was a guy that they plucked in the same way who then got sent on to this bigger future in La Liga. And I've always wondered what Chara could do in a different environment and whether that would get him in to Colombia. But there is no doubt that he is. I mean, at this point, we're closing in on, is he the best defensive midfielder in this league's history? Like, if you're not talking about him in that conversation, you're doing yourself a disservice at this point. Not Diego Chara. Like, he probably couldn't care less, but you're doing yourself a disservice.
He's for sure top five. I don't think anyone will ever argue that. He's top five. And then you got to get into the nitty gritty.
What is what's your call here, Dave? NYC or Portland? Who's got the edge in the midfield?
I didn't even know that was the question that we were asking from the start. I think the way this matchup sets up, I'd say Portland, because I think NYCFC is going to be the aggressor in terms of pressing and trying to take away options for Portland. And all of the things Charlie said about Chara are so good. He's also press proof. Like, he is so clean in possession. He's so comfortable under pressure. And the thing about Paredes is the things you lost from Eric Williamson when he got hurt this summer to Paredes, all of those are going forward. Paredes is comfortable, though, getting pressed. He's clean in possession. He's just not a problem solver in the attack, but that's not the issue, I think, for a game like this. And that's not really the issue for this team. I think one of the reasons they've gotten better defensively is Sebastian Blanco means they don't have to commit numbers forward as much in the attack. And so adding that attacking piece has made them better defensively. And they've been phenomenal. And one of the things they both do so well is the help they give the fullbacks. Like, when they come over, they are able to double team. And I think you'll see Santi Rodriguez will always be near Diego Chara in this game. Like, Chara's job is to help those fullbacks deal with Santi Rodriguez in the way he's played so far. And he's obviously phenomenal at it. So I think I take those two. If Keaton Parks is in, maybe it's a little different just because of how good he was this season. And that's not a knock on James Sands. It's just the relationship he had already built with Morales. But I think that this Portland midfield sets up very well for what they're going to have to deal with from NYCFC.
I'm gonna give the edge to NYCFC here. Maxi Morales has been, I think, underappreciated in a big way for a long time. And you look at everybody's been all over Tati this year, and how good is Tati? Look at his production. Look how many chances that come his way. Like, when you watch NYCFC, whether it be the final ball or more likely a lot of times the ball before the final ball, or that little like turn in possession, or that little combination that frees space and gets them going downhill. That's Maxi. Like, all the underlying numbers love him still. And it's interesting, actually, that both the number 10s in this game, Blanco and Maxi, don't have contracts for these clubs next year. They're trying to get them done. NYCFC thinks they'll get it done with Maxi. He wants to stay. Same thing, obviously, with Blanco. Because of the health issue, because you'll have Maxi from the start, you know, Diego Chara, I agree with you guys. He is better by far than either central midfielder NYCFC has behind. But that full group, that close to full group, I know no Keaton Parks, that would probably take it over the top even more for me. I'm going to go NYCFC in this case just because they have their number 10 from the start. All right, how about attackers? That's what we're calling them. We're not going forwards, we're going attackers because there's a lot of sort of different profiles here. Charlie, who are you taking? Portland, NYCFC. Tati's back. He's hungry. He's hungry. He's going to be starving.
This is the first time where it is so clear and obvious to me that New York City FC have a huge advantage in this one area, the attacking phase of the game. And Tati Castellanos is a golden boot winner for a reason. You talked about Max Morales, and when he gets on the ball, he gets in those pockets. It's the movement of Tati Castellanos that makes it work. And it's because he can play off the back shoulder, he can check, he can combine. He's strong now in his hold-up play. I think that's what was keeping him from being a top number nine in this league, was the strength, hold-up play, being able to combine and link with guys, but also switching up his game, being a little bit more direct. This year, everything's clicked for him. Everyone talks about that. Matt Doyle, I mean, Doyle always loves to bring up he was on that 10-goal drought with it. And then after that, which was a long time ago, he's been on an absolute tear. I've always liked his game, but now you could tell he's complete. He's in the zone. It's when you hit that nirvana as a striker, when no matter what you do, it's gonna come off. He's in that zone. And it's always great to see strikers when they feel that way, because you can see everything they try, it comes off. Sometimes it doesn't, but doesn't change anything with their mindset or their confidence. And then what you love from Santi Rodriguez, who's come in, he's now been a player who can get on the dribble. He gets into the good spots. He makes good runs in the box for cutbacks, even for crosses. He's combining with Max Morales and Tati Castellanos. I really like what he's brought to the table for New York City FC. And Jesus Medina, he's had his moments in MLS. I don't think he's played all that well on this stretch. He's almost been quiet. It's almost like he's gone down, he's regressed, and Santi Rodriguez has gone up and has kind of come
I actually think they're playing like exactly the way maybe NYCFC might have expected, which is that Medina is more like a link possession defensive sort of player, and Santi is rightfully going to be on the ball more and is more creative. Like, I'm not sure that Jesus was ever that.
Medina just missed two sitters.
Yes, I know, I'm saying to you that's
not the intention.
He's goal dangerous adjacent. He's not goal dangerous. He's like on the other side being like, I wish I was over here, and sometimes I am, like at the beginning of this season. Yeah. You just can't expect him to be that guy. That's not who he is.
Yeah, but that's not at all what I was saying. Okay. What I'm saying is he hasn't been playing good. Regardless of wherever he wants to play or whatever style, he hasn't been playing good, period. But Santi Rodriguez has. Fair. So for me, what I'm saying is,
protect my guy Jesus, all right?
Yeah. I've already said he's had his moments. He's shown what he's capable of. He just hasn't brought it at this stretch. That can all change. What we've seen him do is get on the right flank, come inside on his left foot, and hit some bombs. He's also combined. He's curled. But he just hasn't been sharp. And if he could put his game together, and then you have Maxi Rodriguez and Santi Rodriguez all under Tati playing well, combining, man, they're going to cause a lot of problems for Portland. Mabiala and Zuparic, like, they'll engage, they'll dive in, they'll come out, and that's when they'll get hurt in behind.
I think Charlie just put another Argentine on NYCFC. I think he gave them Maxi Rodriguez.
Nice. Well, he meant Morales.
Which I respect.
But that's in the midfield, Charlie. That's what we decided in that pre-show meeting, so they don't count in attackers.
Right. But either way, I'm talking about the front three. You give it to New York City FC
with Dairon, even with, I mean, look, Dave might agree because we're going to say Felipe Mora here, or Nijgoda, either way. And then with Jimmy Chara, even with those guys, we're talking about a Colombian international, a Chile international, and Dairon. Playoff Dairon. Rested Dairon.
Relax. You get called up one time. Let's chill with the term international. I get what you're saying. And obviously, Anders likes to bring it up with me with Felipe Mora. Now, I will say Felipe Mora is a dangerous player in the box. Charlie laid a list of things out that Tati does not well, great. Felipe Mora does none of those things, but he finishes chances in the box. No one on the field is a dud. We're talking about MLS Cup. Right, everyone is worth it on these rosters. That's why these teams are here. But in terms of comparing them, as much as I just said Medina has holes in his game as an attacking player, I agree that he's clean in possession. He starts transition well. He works hard defensively. I think whatever negative you're getting from whatever step down you're taking from him, from Dairon or Chara on the wings, whatever it is, the gap between Tati and Felipe Mora and Nijgoda this year, maybe not Nijgoda next year when he's come back from the ACL fully and is ready to play, is way bigger. And it's not just the golden boot. I've talked about it a million times. He's the emotional leader. He's the press leader. He's the one who drops in and creates and helps them open up transition. He is the heartbeat of this team, and he is the best center forward in the league. And that gap, especially with the way Santi Rodriguez has played, is larger. And so you have to, I think, give the – the nod to NYCFC. And then you add in the matchup, as Charlie said. Tati's so good at pulling center backs with him because he can play anywhere, right? He was a winger for 2 years in this league. He loves facing players up. He can take a center back on his back and drop deep and let Maxi come underneath him. Everything Tati does well is a threat for what the Portland Timbers have struggled with. And so you have to look at this team and say they have the advantage in the attack.
I think Santi Rodriguez is like his elevation changes this math, right? Like if he hadn't done what he's done in the past month and a half, 2 months or so, you know, he got in early in the season and it took him some time to settle. He's settled the best, I think, of all their young players. If he hadn't reached this level, I would go with the Timbers. But look, Jimmy's not exactly a picture of consistency. You're right. Tati is by far and away better than either center forward option that they have. Santi is maybe not at the level of Dairon goal scoring wise, but as a creator, as someone who not only just for himself, chances, space, etc., he's really reached a new level. I'm going to go with you guys. I'm going to go NYCFC as well. But there's some special players in this match, and there's a lot of special ones off the bench. Let's talk bench, and let's start with Diego Valeri. Is this his last game? Sure feels like it's his last game with the Timbers. Sure feels like this is it. Here's a quote from him, speaking in Spanish ahead of this game. Does he want to play next year? Quote, playing for sure. Playing here looks like it's going to be a bit difficult. He signed ahead of the 2020 season a multi-year extension. It has now been multi-years. I would assume there's a team option probably for year three. Maybe there's not. I don't know. But I would also assume that the team option number is at a number that the team probably would not want to take, given that Diego is now really he's a bit player, right? He's a sub, and he's not the first option off the bench when it comes to subs. That's been Santiago Moreno. He hasn't started a game. One game since the start of August. I don't think he has a goal and assist since that period. His role has changed. You know, Diego Chara has stayed in that starting lineup, and he's in large part been the same player, at least extremely similar to what he was at his peak. And Diego Valeri hasn't been able to maintain that, but also has had Sebastian Blanco come into the team and sort of take over that role. It really feels to me like the writing is sort of on the wall here that this is the farewell, that this is it. I think that's a huge, interesting, fascinating storyline. And I just wonder how it's going to go down. Will Diego Valeri even have the opportunity to impact this game in the way that it would feel fitting for him to do so, given the fact that it looks like, and I don't know, we could be wrong here, that Sebastian Blanco will come off the bench, that you'll have Santiago Moreno on the bench, that you'll have, you know, options that may get the call from Gio Savarese before he would. Nijgoda would be another attacking one. There could very likely be three attacking options off the bench that would get in before Diego Valeri.
I think there will be, because you're adding Asprilla. If Blanco's available, that's two players that didn't play in the last game that are available. And you've already named the three. One of Loria or Moreno will be, and Nijgoda will be, and Blanco most likely will be. So I would be surprised outside of a blowout win if he even appears for the Portland Timbers. And you know what? Like, yes, I love Diego Valeri. I think he's done massive things for this league. I don't think. He's obviously become a saint in this city. And I hope he stays here. And I don't really understand.
It sounds like he wants to keep playing.
I don't know the appeal there of, like, you've brought your family here, you have a life here, but whatever. Diego Valeri wants to do whatever he wants to do. Maybe he comes back to live here like Liam Ridgewell's done afterwards. Whatever that is. But you got to win, right? And I think the celebration of him, of helping him be a part of a trophy lift in this stadium for the first time ever in his career, that's the job on Saturday for the Portland Timbers. It's not to get him on the field for some reason if you have to. And most likely, not 100%, but most likely, their best ability to win will not be using him in this game.
This is sort of a legacy moment. Charlie, as a player, what do you think? Like, how do you empathize with Diego Valeri in this moment?
Yeah, I feel for him. And I if it is his last game, which it very well could be, I think you put some great points together, then I want him to go out like a champ. I think everyone does, given what he's how he's performed, how he's carried Portland throughout, you know, his Major League Soccer career, what he's been able to accomplish, just an incredible person and player. You want to see those guys go out with the happy ending. It doesn't always happen that way, but I would love to see it.
Who has the edge on the bench? I kind of walked you through the Timbers options, especially attacking wise. Santiago Moreno, Nizhgoda, Blanco, we think, Diego Valeri. On the other side, again, this is just the attacking side of
Tyus
things.
Tyus Magno,
Thiago Andrade, Ismael Tejuri Shradi, Hebert, Gudi Thrarensen is an attacking option. I mean, look, didn't he beat the Revs with a free kick or almost beat the Revs? I don't know. He's an attacking option, you'd think.
Who's got the edge? Against Philly to win the game, by the way.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Yeah, my memory. Yeah, it's like I'm like a goldfish around here, you know what I mean? I'm just searching for
Blanco's
the next.
If Blanco's 85 or 90% on this, it's that just because of how good he is. NYCFC has one of the best benches in the league. Tejuri Shradi could start for most teams.
Depth.
Tyus Magno gets you the goal. They have depth, but Sebastian Blanco's different. Plus a Moreno or a Loria. I think Portland has depth as well across those spots, including the crown jewel in Blanco. So for this game, I would say it's Portland.
I can't disagree with that. I think Blanco is, he changes the game in a way nobody else can. It's just as simple as that. Nobody else has the quality, the experience, the repeat sort of heroics in moments like these. And by the way, he's got a little bit of motivation as well because he's negotiating a contract too. Let's talk coaching. Who do you think has the edge on the coaching side, Charlie? Gio or Ronnie?
Oof.
Both of them have pushed the right buttons the second half of the season. Yep. Couple four seeds that make a run, you got to do so. Basically, since the Timbers got worked over by Seattle and Austin, they've really hit it. And I gave you the stat before. I think it's like 13-3-1 in their last 17. Only one of those losses was a home loss, and that was Vancouver. And the other side, Ronnie Dyla, after they were sort of it looked like they might not even make the playoffs, have turned in one of the best runs of any team in the league. Since mid-fall or so.
I'm going to go with you. A split. A draw.
I opened the door, yes. And you're walking right through it.
I think what Gio Savarese has done for Portland is nothing short of miraculous, to be honest. Starting this year, given the depth of his squad, to be able to steer this team to MLS Cup, I think is incredible. Really incredible. Because he's got them playing together, passionate. I think he's made the right tactical adjustments when he's needed to. They play so well in the style that he's kind of adopted in Portland, which is we're just going to be the best counterattack team, the best organized team, and the best team in transition. Or we're just capitalizing on set pieces, but we're going to defend first. We're going to be organized. To get to MLS Cup, that is incredible. And on the flip side, you look at what Ronnie Dyla has had to do. One, I think people have always looked at what Patrick Vieira, how he kind of built the club, really kind of got them going in the right direction. And then Domi Torrent, I think, tried to build off of that, but was still kind of in the shadow, but got some solid pieces, brought them into the team. But Ronnie Dyla, he has not convinced anyone that he was the right man for the job. And there was a lot of people going back and forth. And I think it wasn't until this year and towards the end of this year that people felt like, wow, actually he is a great man manager. He got this team going, firing on all cylinders at the right time of the year, putting Tati Castellanos as the nine, and then taking down the greatest regular season team in history in Revs on the road, beating. Atlanta United.
Did you know NYCFC beat the Revs? I just want to make sure you know.
Hey, I know you're is still in misery mode.
The Revs, yeah, the
Sporting
Revs.
Kansas
lost.
City,
guys.
Sporting Kansas City. All right, but then to go to Philly on the road too. I just think what he's been able to do, obviously his squad is gifted and they have a lot of quality, but to push the right buttons, I think you have to give him so much credit. So job well done for both coaches.
I like the draw on this one because both are in much different situations and scenarios that they're having to work their way through. So it's hard to go, you know, it's not apples to apples. I thought one big encouraging sign for NYCFC was that he went to his bench pretty quick against Philly. He didn't wait around to try to change that game late on. And it also helps when Philly aren't able to do that themselves, so it makes sense that we're going to go early and kind of force you into a different sort of game here. So that was a point for Dyla. And I just think Gio just – he gets to a point of the year, and he gets to a point in knockout competition where he's just like, this is it, boys. Like, here's how simple it is. You do this, you do that, you're going to win games, and it's his seventh final in 10 years. It works for him. 2013, 15, 16, wins NASL. He's a runner-up in 17. Wins MLS's back. Went to the 2018 MLS Cup final. Didn't get it done in Atlanta. But he just seems to understand how to manufacture these runs and how to simplify it in an effective, efficient way for the group that he has. So I'm going to go draw on this one. It'll come down to in-game adjustments probably to really truly judge these guys. But it's hard to judge them when we don't know what they have to adjust to in-game, right? Like, we don't know if Felipe Mora is going to score a goal in the fifth minute. We don't know who's going to pull up with injury and have to change everything. We don't know what's going to happen, and that's where they'll get judged. They'll get judged in those 90 or 120 minutes.
I think, to me, the big question is, how do you play the first 15? Does Portland come out and take the ball like they did against RSL and play aggressive and play high and use the crowd and try and jump on NYCFC? They did it really well against RSL. I was surprised by that. Because they came out second best against Minnesota to start the playoffs, and they came out second best against Colorado after that. And so I think that's a huge part of what's going to happen, and I think that's a huge part of the decisions they have to make.
All right, so on balance, I feel like we gave the edge to NYCFC as we went through all these categories. Does that feel right to you guys? Like, it's not a huge gap we're saying, but there's a little bit of a push, we think, to NYCFC. But then I would argue that if you come back to the home field advantage side, again, it evens it all out.
Pretty close to even.
Yeah, now you're like plus 160, whatever the hell that means on both sides. I'm still figuring that out.
I think on top of the home field advantage, you're looking at a Timbers team that's been here before.
Yeah.
You're looking
experience advantage.
And I don't think it's a given that this home crowd could be an advantage to everyone, right? You could be over nervous. You could be over excited. That's not an issue with this group because they've been there and because I think of the way that Gio communicates with his team and what he does. Like, I think that they are in a great spot on all of those intangibles off the field, and that's another reason that this is such a close matchup.
MLS Cup, Saturday, Timbers, New York City FC, 3 p.m. Eastern. Watch it. ABC, Unimas, Turian, TSN, TVA. If you got friends that are into soccer, if you got friends that like MLS and you're not hearing them chatter about it, if you got friends that you think just might want to drink some, I don't know, beers if you're of age, or you like beer, or whatever it is that you like. Maybe whatever you like to do when you watch soccer games or sporting events or TV, they just want to get together with you. Like, introduce it to them, because I'm just going to throw this in there before we continue and kind of wrap up what this might mean for both on both sides, win or lose. Shane Evans just hit us up on Twitter and says, where will tomorrow's atmosphere rank in MLS atmosphere history? I have a really hard time with that one, actually ranking it. But I would think it would be at or near the top. Like, that's another reason to watch this game. Of course, Anders is in the chat over here behind Seattle. Behind Seattle. Say,
don't forget 2018 in Atlanta, too.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I would say 2017 in Toronto with them looking for payback. These are just recent ones. There's so many other good ones throughout the years. We're just doing the modern
Columbus
history.
Against Portland was epic.
Yeah.
Was
Did you crazy. Know that it was?
Yeah, 2014 in LA was incredible.
Oh, yeah. Did you enjoy that one, Chai? Good one?
Yeah. I have to ask
Kaylin about what, 2010 and 2011 as well. Do you even remember how cold it was in Kansas City? No?
No, I never heard of it.
No, what, 2013? Never heard about that. Yeah, 2013. Yeah.
Oh, really? In college?
Yeah. It's going to be near the top. What I'm saying is that
how pumped were you during the Philly game when they ran their Really in Colin footage of him spray painting the wall in 2013?
Just let me tell you, I searched that entire game for a gift that I made back in the day during CONCACAF Champions League when Really in Colin got sent off against Chivas and wagged his finger the whole way down the tunnel.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's my favorite Really in Colin moment. That moment, right there. The red card, him disagreeing, the video shot. It was art. It was beautiful. What I'm saying is, even if you can't appreciate. You don't want to appreciate. We don't know how the soccer is going to be. We know the atmosphere is going to be incredible, historic, special, wonderful, all the plaudits that you can tack on it. So that's another reason to watch this game. All right, what would a win mean to NYCFC? Let's keep this fairly short. Dave, you roll this one out. What do you think? What's a win mean for NYCFC? A championship?
I think it validates the turn they made in their club of going away from the Villas and the Pirlos and going to a young team built on depth through the CFG scouting group. I think it validates the coaching decisions they've made since Patrick Vieira started, the academy decisions they've made of the players they've pushed through to win with potentially James Sands and Tavon Gray starting for you. I think for NYCFC, you mentioned it. They have been one of, if not the best team over the course of the regular seasons. Now is their chance to be anointed for all of the good things they've done. And without a championship, they may not be. Maybe getting here is enough. I'm not sure. But I think for all of that, it's huge. And then to put yourself in a category that not many clubs are in anymore. It's not like everyone wins. Seattle's there every time. You know, Toronto's been there. And now Portland's been there consistently. You don't look around and let's say, for example, your regional rivals. Philly, Red Bull, New England, DC. Most of those haven't won MLS Cup, and the other one hasn't done it since you were born. Like, this isn't something that's common. And so for NYCFC, I think this is a once-in-a-club opportunity to win that first cup, and I think it does a lot of good for the decisions they've made.
I agree. What I had said about the spine, I completely agree with you. This team, nobody has more points in this league, and it's not like they might be, they might not be. Nobody has more points in this league since 2016 than NYCFC, but they have nothing to show for it. They don't have anything. They don't have a shield. They don't have an Open Cup. They don't have an MLS Cup. They don't have a fill-in-the-blank. They don't have any of it. And those guys came here for one reason, the Maxis, the Maxims, the Alexander Kayans, the Sean Johns. Like, this is their chance, and you're right, to do it with two homegrowns, and then just have bragging rights, man. Like, just until the end of time to lord over Red Bulls fans would be a wonderful thing for that fan base. That's more of a supporter-facing thing. The other side of this, they might not be in this position next year. Tati might get sold. They might lose that talisman.
You have to assume, for every club, you always have to assume this is your last chance to get there. It's so tough to get there, unless you're Seattle. It's so tough to get there. You always have to assume you will not be back. And that is why it's a once-in-a-club opportunity for NYCFC now that they're already here.
Yeah, must win. I said we were going to do what would it mean if they lose. We're not going to do that. That's cruel and unusual, and we should not do that. What would it mean to the Portland Timbers, Charlie, to win this MLS Cup, to capture their second in 6 years? Of course, they won 2015 in Columbus. By the way, we're talking home field advantage. They're one of only two teams to win in this era of non-neutral sites on the road. The other was the Seattle Sounders, who didn't take a shot on goal in that match. Just reminding you, Anders, in case you've forgotten in the back end here. What would this mean to the Timbers, Charlie?
It would be massive. You talk about a moment that will go down in history. It'll be one of the pivotal moments for the club that they can think, wow, look what we did. Our first trophy, MLS Cup, at home, on our soil, on our pitch, in our city, for our fans, for the culture. As it just continues to grow, everyone in that city has just gravitated towards the Timbers. It's always the talk of the town. I remember going there and seeing scarves in every restaurant, seeing, photos of Timbers gear. And I'm thinking, this city has really taken to the club. They're all about it. For me, it was the first time I saw a city just give nothing but love to the Portland Timbers. Like, they are number one to us. They are everything. And that was something, I think, cool to see, just as a fan of the sport in this country, to say, hey, this can work. This can be the number one sport. This can be something where everyone gets together in the morning of a game day and goes to the bars or club,
that you're born into it. You don't have a choice. Yeah. It's like, hey, I was born this area near Kansas City, so I'm a Chiefs fan or whatever it is. It's like, hey, you're born in this area. You're a Timbers fan. That's what you're raised as.
It felt to me as close as you got to like a real authentic European club. That's what it felt like to me going there. Everybody was all about it. The fans even had Timbers tattoos. That brought me back to Stockholm where I saw that for the first time. So I was all about the culture, the fan culture in Portland, to be honest. Great city, great restaurants, but
wonderful French toast.
The wonderful French toast. But more importantly, the supporters, they pumped me up. And when you played there, you felt it.
Can I say something? And it might be controversial, but I think a win here turns them into a dynasty. Three trophies in six years with
that's
with
controversial. Core, I'll tell you that right
with
now.
With the core of Chara,
technically seven.
Valeria.
Does it change your math if it's seven? Because it's technically seven, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. That's seven seasons.
Wow, this has been a prime show just for numbers. I just want 160 bucks because you said that.
When I see a list in front of me, I am taking that chance, man. I'm hitting the gap.
Fair. Three trophies in 7 years, four finals, which I think is key to that. It's not 2015 and 21. It's to go to the final in the middle, to win MLS's back in the middle, to go to a Open Cup semifinal. In my mind, and I understand there are different coaching staffs and there are different pieces across these teams. In my mind, and obviously Chara and Valeria, the linchpin, I've made this argument about the San Antonio Spurs a million times as well. And I've normally get shouted down. I think that this team becomes a dynasty if they win it.
I would disagree with you. I think the fact that there's that much time between those two and that MLS is back, though important, is a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a strange one. The question.
Narrative guy, when you look back in 8 years and you're talking about the teams, and you, how often do you bring up Kansas City under those great teams? What'd they win? An Open Cup and then...
Yeah,
but honestly, you're not saying dynasty.
Yeah, we don't say
I
dynasty.
Think when you talk about teams, you're going to talk about this Portland Timbers team.
I agree. But you said, but that's different than a dynasty. That's different than a dynasty.
It's a dynasty, baby.
Here's a question from Alan. Here's a question. I know you're in Portland. You're trying to get free beers. I feel you. Just put on the expense account.
Maybe in New York, kid. This is a dynasty in New York, kid, but not here.
Yeah, definitely not New York. Maybe for the Knicks.
Out of my face,
Charlie. We got to a final. We're a dynasty, right? We got to a final. We got to get there first.
My definition of dynasty is much different up here in New England.
Sorry, I'm just imagining Charlie as Leonardo DiCaprio with the drink toast of like, okay. Alan says, which of these two teams has the...
takes place in New York, so watch out.
It probably does. Which of the two teams has the best chance to be back in the final next year? So this goes to your dynasty. Could it be the Timbers who have the best chance? What do you think? You have the scouting network for NYCFC. I don't know. Who do you think?
Who has the best chance to be back next year? You have to say
correct.
NYCFC.
In a final.
Yeah, you have to say
you
NYCFC.
Think so?
You don't know.
Even though they, Mabiala even though it's, races. It's likely they could lose their best player. They could lose Tati.
For sure, but Mabiala has raised his game. I don't know if he can get there again next season. Clark, I think, is 34, 35. Chara, obviously, I can't question it, but you don't know where he's at. When does Eric Williamson come back? Does he ever hit peak form next year? Is Sebastian Blanco back? Does he ever hit big? I think there's more question marks on that side, because when you look at NYCFC, one, Eber will be back next year. So I think if you do lose Tati, it blunts it a little bit. But the other thing is, they've signed like nine young guys to be the next Tati. So they've already planned for that, and they've shown success that they know how to get young international players to settle well in this league.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me like
I'll go with you as well.
Yeah, it feels to me like this could be the start of something big for NYCFC, where they don't just pay it off in the regular season. It's been quiet. I mean, I just keep repeating it. They have the most points in the league of anybody since 2016. In switching managers, by the way, a couple times, there is just an advantage that they have in their ability to recruit and their ability to identify players, and they seem to be figuring out what's going to work. So I think I'd be on your side as well, NYCFC. All right, you want to hit some news and notes? Or should we do predictions? I said Timbers in my column. I don't want to explain that much more. I just said Timbers. Just feel like, you know,
Charlie?
Veterans in Portland.
I'll save it for the pregame.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good day. Hey, look at you. Look at you. He knows how to promote.
Where can I find
on Twitter.
Such a pregame?
Yeah. Okay. Boy, you can find it on Twitter. Pre-game, of course, we'll have Dave and Zarek in Portland giving us a little feel for the environment, which I'm sure is going to be crazy from like the 6 a.m. that morning, whenever they are starting to line up, etc. And then we'll have the post-game on Twitter as well. So tune in. Final Whistle.
Twitter.
Come hang out. MLS Cup 2021, 3 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, ABC, Unimas, Turian, TSN, TVA, also on SiriusXM. If you want to listen to it, Timbers, New York City from Providence Park. It is going to be amazing. One game left. Make sure you watch it. Let's hit some news and notes and get out of here. Stephen Goff dropped this one into the Twitter. MLS trade in the works, according to two sources, not just one, two. Sebastian Legette from Galaxy to New England Revolution, which would pay straight money in the deal. The trade window opens on Sunday, by the way. Of course, Legette played for Bruce Arena at the Galaxy and with the U.S. national team. Goff says that trade is not finalized, that Charlotte FC have also been interested in the 29-year-old midfielder, Sebastian Legette. And our boy Tom Bogert confirmed all that and had some comment from Chris Megalutis, who's the agent on this one. What do you think about this potential trade, Charlie?
I think it's a fit. I mean, you look at what Bruce Arena has done with the New England Revolution, someone who he's very familiar with.
Boy, look at the Bruce going to a veteran he trusts, huh? Look at us.
Oh, so
look at us. Back together again.
Who would have thought?
In that position as well, you're looking at the midfield. You had Tommy McNamara, Matt Polster, and then you had Carlos Heel as the 10, but whoever played next to Matt Polster, sometimes they play with two sitting, sometimes one with two in front of him. It just seems like it's a good fit, a good opportunity for Sebastian to come here and play in a system that would suit him.
Completely agree with that.
I just hope that every team in MLS put in just at least some form of offer or question if he's available. There's not a team in MLS that does not need Sebastian Legette. He's on a good contract. He's a domestic. He can play four different ways that you need him to. It's one of those where it's a great pickup for the Revs, but I hope every other team at least kicked the tires.
It seemed like the Galaxy were sort of phasing him out a little bit at the end, that maybe he didn't exactly fit with what they were doing or where they were going. Let's just throw a number out there just to have fun with this. What would a number be that you would, when you see if this trade does come to fruition to whoever it is, be it Charlotte or to the Revs, and the Revs got to be like, hey, Charlotte, get the hell out of here. I know everybody knows you have a lot of allocation money. Like, stop trying to drive this number up. What would be the number that you would see and think, yeah, that sounds about right?
I'd say 750K probably, based off the trades.
I was thinking 800. That was the number in my mind.
Yeah, I don't think the only reason, so Georgie, obviously last year was a little over $1 million. But you're talking about a player that's young that has sell-on value. Legette doesn't have any of that. At 29, this is what you're getting. But for the numbers we've seen of like projects are getting 500,000 now, this is a known quantity. And maybe the number goes up because other teams are bidding. But I think it's probably somewhere around 750, 800.
What do you
which
think, Charlie?
Is like not a ridiculous trade in MLS Same. Anymore. It used to be like 150 was out of your mind.
Yeah, I think spot on with that number.
We'll see what happens. Here's a number for you. Paul Tenorio, Sam Stashgold, the Athletic folks, they reported it. Now everybody's confirming it, whether it be Tom or Michelle Kaufman in Miami. Lewis Morgan headed from Inter Miami to New York Red Bulls for $1.2 million in allocation money. Deal agreed by both clubs. Not official until the window opens after MLS Cup. Of course, Miami was fined for the Matuidi stuff, and so they're going to have to pay in allocation money. This would help them recoup a big chunk of that. But Lewis Morgan is one of their best players. He didn't quite have the same form this year or the same production as he had last year, but this feels like certainly a fit for the Red Bulls, and given the situation for Miami, a pretty logical move probably just to sort of get back to break even, so to speak. But you're losing a big part of your team.
You assume
I think it's a good move for both clubs. I think if you're looking at Red Bulls, now they can drop Christian Caceres back into his normal holding midfield position, you know, as a deep lying next to Drew Yearwood, and you can bring Lewis Morgan higher up the pitch because they need a little bit more creativity. They need somebody who can generate more attacking chances because they are going to high press. They're going to create off a transition in the attacking half. But as far as breaking out and being someone who could give you a little bit more, I think Lewis Morgan would be a great addition to the to that Red Bulls team.
What do you think, Dave?
I agree with Charlie. I think you're looking at a guy who's direct, dangerous in transition, but a little bit more refined in that attack. You assume Miami. Every team in the league said, Miami, you need allocation. And everyone has a shopping list of who they want. And Lewis Morgan's at the top. So that number is inflated because every team in the league probably came and said, this is what we'll give you for Lewis Morgan. And so you get 1.2 million allocation, which looks like a lot. I would also say that you have to think about it with Red Bull, that now you sort of put him in the Red Bull system as well. And he's 25. So maybe he's a little bit too old for that. But is this a guy who could end up at Salzburg? And maybe somewhere further along the line later on. And so it makes sense to bring him into the team. And if I'm a Red Bull fan, I'm happy that I'm getting a known quantity in MLS. Because while they've done well with some of the foreign signings, it takes time. And now you finally have a guy coming in who already knows how to be successful in this league. And that's not something Red Bull's done a lot of over the last few years.
Sunday, trade window always goes crazy as people prepare for the expansion draft, which is Tuesday for Charlotte FC. What's today? Today's Thursday night, MLS After Dark. Yeah, the next Tuesday, the one like the 14th, the one next week. That's when the expansion draft is. Everybody will prepare for that, try to figure that all out. We, of course, will be talking about covering that. I hope that the protected lists are out on Monday when we're reviewing MLS Cup and doing that. We shall see. Other stuff from around the league before we get out of here. State of the Union for Don Garber always happens before MLS Cup. Some news coming out of that one. Sure seems like Las Vegas is going to be team number 30. Just not really writing on the wall. Sure seems that way. Don said, nah. To the World Cup every 2 years. You could go read his comments. He said he understands it, but in his point of view, that's not ideal. But you can hear exactly what he had to say on that one. As with all of this stuff, he's talking about a new media rights deal, maybe in the first part of 2022. I know our listenership will be very happy to hear that blackouts are not supposed to be a part of that. That's something that we hear about from time to time. So that's a big news item to watch in the next couple months. And then new Rooney Rule updates on the interviewing and hiring of minority candidates. That is big progress for the league, and now the work is to be done, which is to follow the rules and to see some opportunities given to people that deserve it. All right, that's it for us. Any final thoughts? I see on Twitter here that the campfires are lit, Dave, that the hands are being warmed outside Providence Park. They are preparing.
I'm heading there right now. I'm going to go there right now and talk to a couple fans.
Nice.
And if you're in Portland, hit me up. Let me know.
As you should.
All right. That's it, 401-206-0MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com, 3 p.m. Eastern, Saturday, MLS Cup, ABC, Unimas, TUDN, TSN, TVA, SiriusXM. We got the Twitter pregame and postgame shows. This is it! That's right, Charlie. If you're watching on YouTube, he just broke it down. Adios. We'll see you on Monday, everybody.
Cup. Let's go.
We'll be right back.